This is Audible.
Alien Pets, Xenorelations Book 1. Written by Trisha McNary. Narrated by Sophie Dye. Chapter 1. A few short weeks after she graduated from space school, Antaska stood in front of a clear barrier, waiting and hoping to be selected. She held her small gray and white cat, Potot, in her arms. Energized with excitement and high-strung nerves, Antaska watched the gigantic green alien Verdantes. Crowds of them walked in the curved corridor outside her viewing room. The aliens, Antaska's prospective employers, looked in at her and the other humans in similar viewing rooms built by the Verdantes to suit their purposes. The walls on the sides of her viewing room blocked Antaska from seeing the other humans, and which aliens were taking an interest in them. Now one of the aliens looked at Antaska and paused. The 8-foot-tall giant approached and stopped right in front of her. Antaska looked up to see enormous slanting green eyes staring down at her. Above the eyes, green curly hair covered an enormous cranium. The alien lifted a large 6-fingered hand and waved at her. Antaska waved back and smiled. "Maybe I'll be selected already," she thought.
"Grrr,"
she heard and looked down. Potot stiffened in her arms. She hissed and spat at the Verdante in front of them. The big eyes of the alien got bigger. "Stop that!" Antaska said to Potot. "Shush!" But the tiny cat wouldn't stop.
"Row!"
Potot let out an endless angry meow. The alien shrugged big shoulders and shook his head. He lifted up his hands as if to say, "What can I do?" and walked away. Potot stopped meowing and settled back down in Antaska's arms. "What is wrong with you?" Antaska asked the little cat. She didn't expect an answer, of course, and she didn't get one. "Are you crazy? You might have just blown our only chance to go to space. My life's dream. Don't you dare do that again." Antaska talked out loud to the cat. It was a habit she'd got into. Sometimes, it almost seemed like Potot understood what she was saying. This had better be one of those times, thought Antaska. She felt a slight movement and looked down to see the Potot cleaning a snow-white paw. Antaska looked up. Another alien, this one female, was standing in front of the clear barrier. She wore the same bright blue spacesuit as the males, but she had a smaller, more delicate feminine body and features. Shiny, bright green hair brushed her shoulders. Large, pale green eyes crinkled up as she looked down at Antaska and Potot. "Maybe Potot will like this one better," Antaska thought. Antaska smiled up at the alien and waved. The female alien waved back and then made signals with her hands. She pointed at herself, then at Antaska and little Potot, and then up towards space. Antaska nodded and gave her a thumbs up. "Yes," she thought.
"Grrr,"
Potot started growling. "Oh no, you bad cat, not again," Antaska admonished her, but the cat paid no attention.
"Reow!"
Potot let out her endless howl. The Verdante female's smallish mouth formed an O shape. She shook her big head from side to side. "No, no, stop, stop," Antaska pleaded with her cat. But of course, Potot didn't listen. The alien lowered her chin and closed her eyes for a moment. Antaska read that as disappointment. Then the large green female turned and walked away. Antaska's hopes took a dive. She turned, walked a few feet back, and plopped down on the couch built into the back wall of the small viewing room. "Are you trying to stop me from going into space?" Antaska asked Potat as she set her down on the couch. Potat, now calm and settled, looked up at her with innocent gold eyes. "Maybe cats just aren't adaptable to new things," thought Antaska. "Maybe they're just not that intelligent." A tiny paw reached out and slapped her leg kind of hard. "That wasn't nice," Antaska told her. "Am I going to be stuck on Earth with a crazy cat?" she said out loud to no one in particular. Potat ignored her and began to take a bath. Antaska sighed and leaned against the back of the couch. With dimming hope, she watched the large aliens walking past outside her viewing room. A few minutes later, the nutty cat jumped off the couch and walked to the front of the viewing room. Potat sat down there and watched the Verdantes passing by, as if she were the one they might pick. Then she looked back and stared hard at Antaska. "I think she wants me to go over there now," Antaska thought. "Or maybe this cat has finally drove me crazy." Grumbling about the problems with cats, Antaska got off the couch and walked over to Potat. She picked up the tiny cat and whispered in her ear. "Okay, you've got your way once again, as usual. I hope you're happy, whatever you're up to." Potat purred back in her ear. Among the other Verdantes, lanky, thin M. Hoivel took long strides around the circle of rooms containing Earth humans. It was his second or third time circling around. So many of them. How was he supposed to choose? The humans stood near the front of their viewing containers, watching the passing Verdantes with wide, round eyes, except at a few of the containers. "Some have been taken already?" Hoivel thought. "I'd better pick one before they're all gone." He walked past an empty spot to the next one where a male human was performing martial arts moves. The red-haired male was stockier than the usual design for space travel, with cool, genetically designed tattoos along his arms and chest. M. Hoivel stopped in front of the Earthman and watched him. The man smiled and kicked high in the air. It might be fun to have someone to practice fighting with, thought M. Hoivel. Of course, it would all have to be pretend. They're so much smaller and weaker and slower. I could easily kill him by accident if I wasn't careful. That wouldn't be good. M. Hoivel stood there watching, trying to decide whether taking this one would be a good idea or not. Out of nowhere, he heard the sound of a small female telepathic voice. "Here! Over here!" said the voice repeatedly and insistently. "Who's that?" he wondered. He looked around, but there were no female Verdantes close by, and those walking by weren't paying any attention to him at all. They might have been interested in the human male, but they wouldn't approach the container when another Verdante was already there. That rule stopped people from fighting over the same pet. No, the strange, tiny voice wasn't a Verdante, and it seemed to be coming from the direction of the cube next to him. M. Hoivel looked over. Now a human female stood there. She held a teeny, tiny gray and white cat in her arms. Could that Earth female be telepathic? M. Hoivel wondered. No. That's not possible. M. Hoivel lost interest in the martial arts man. He walked over to stare at the young woman with the cat. The tiny voice stopped. Did I really hear that? He wondered. He shook his big green head. The pink-haired Earth female smiled up at him. This is the one. M. Hoivel suddenly knew it for sure without knowing why. He made the hand signs asking the human if she would like to go up to space with him. She didn't answer right away. She lifted her cat, stared at it, and talked to it. Could that cat be sentient? Imhoival wondered. No, that's not possible either. But the young woman seemed to be asking the cat's opinion. The cat leaned toward Imhoival behind the clear barrier and reached out her paws toward him. Then the earth female nodded her head and gave him a thumbs up. Imhoival placed his palm on the pad outside her viewing container to select her. Chapter 2. From the moment she landed the job that would take her away from Earth for the rest of her life, Antaska had been thrilled and excited. Now she felt nervous. She stood at the entrance to the spaceship. The doors slid silently open. Imhoival, her new employer, stood there. He looked down at her, but he didn't greet her. He didn't smile or change his expression. But his enormous upward-slanted green eyes slanted up even higher. He seemed friendlier when I met him in the viewing room. Was I imagining that? Antaska wondered. Imhoival stepped back from the door and motioned Antaska inside. Then he turned and took off walking fast. Antaska followed him as fast as she could through the bare, high-ceilinged, curved hallway that circled the spaceship's outer rim. Never once looking back in her direction, Imhoival walked fast, taking huge strides on his much longer legs. Antaska brushed away the pink hair that kept falling across her almond-shaped gray eyes as she rushed after him with high bounding steps on the spongy floor. She hoped nothing would fall off the floating cart she pulled behind her. All her few possessions were on the cart, and also Potot. The small cat was tranquilized and sleeping, to protect her from the shock of this drastic change to her living situation. Antaska walked as fast as she could, but she fell farther and farther behind Imhoival. In the distance, she saw Imhoival stop and open a panel high in the side of an inner wall. Another tall, thin alien male approached him and stopped about 5 feet away. In contrast to Imhoival's dark, almost black-green hair, this man's hair was a light lime-green shade. Their features were different, but they both had the green skin of their species. They looked kind of like Earth humans, but the tops of their heads were bigger in proportion to the rest. Faces with large foreheads and huge eyes that narrowed down and pointed chins. As Antaska walked toward the two men, she slowed her pace. Her eyes grew large and round with a curiosity that went unnoticed. Imhoival stopped what he was doing. He turned and stared at the other man, who returned his silent stare. Antaska knew that the Verdantes were telepathic, and she guessed that they were talking. Still, Antaska felt an inner chill while she waited and watched the two large beings stare at each other in silence. Antaska couldn't hear their mental talk, but she had a strange feeling of coldness that wasn't caused by the cool but comfortable ambient temperature of the spaceship hallway. Now, Antaska caught up with Imhoival. She stopped a few feet away from the two men. The strange cold feeling seemed to warm and melt away. The second alien turned and looked down at Antaska. The corners of his eyes lifted up too, but he didn't say anything to her. Then he turned and walked away. This job seems strange already, Antaska thought. Will it be like this for the next 300 years? Her new employer looked down at her and then continued on his fast walk. Antaska sped after him. He stopped in front of what seemed to be a tall, narrow doorway. It was unmarked and only distinguishable as a door by the seam around its edges. Still ignoring Antaska, Imhoival pressed his large palm against the wall in a spot that seemed no different than any other spot. A panel opened up at his chest height, which was just over Antaska's head. Imhoival lifted his arms and began waving the long 6 fingers of both hands against something inside the recessed opening. Antaska couldn't see in from her much shorter height, He finished what he was doing, and the panel closed. A chime sounded, and the door silently slid up and open. M. Hoivel went through without stopping to wait for Antaska. The door began to slide back down. She rushed in after him, pulling her cart with the still-sleeping Potok behind her. Thinking of Potok calmed some of Antaska's nervousness. The Verdantes let me bring my pet I'm so attached to on their spaceship, so they must be a compassionate species, she told herself. More Verdantes passed by as Antaska and M. Hoivel walked along, some also followed by humans pulling luggage carts. Antaska and the other humans exchanged glances as they passed. A quick, breathless smile, a wave of the free hand. They're all nervous too, Antaska realized. Etchings of tall, narrow doors appeared at random intervals along the interior corridors. The high doorways rose to a dizzying height of about 15 feet within the even higher hallways. The doors seemed to dwarf even the 8-foot-tall M. Hoivel. Antaska tilted her head all the way back to look up. She felt unbalanced by the view of the walls and door markings curving gradually in toward the ceiling. The behavior of M. Hoivel was even more unsettling. It was true that their only meeting had been brief, and they had spoke only with sign language. But even with the clear barrier between them in the viewing room, Antaska had thought he was warm and friendly. Now on the spaceship, M. Hoivel seemed like a different person. His continued silence and blank expression seemed to show a complete lack of interest in her. Antaska had learned in space school classes to expect long periods of silence from her Verdante employer. But the actual experience of being treated as invisible was disturbing. And now, she noticed that the tan ship suit she had been so happy with, made of comfortable stretchy fabric, was the exact shade of the walls. All of the Earth humans wore ship suits of the same color. M. Hoivel and the other Verdantes they passed all wore fitted ship suits designed like Antaska's, but theirs were a bright blue color that showed up in the tan hallways. Both the males and females were around 8 feet tall. All of their faces wore the same blank expression as M. Hoivel's. Like Earth humans, their hair colors, textures, and eye colors varied, but they all had an unhumanly green shading in their skin and features. They walked along, and Antaska noticed that M. Hoivel sometimes looked at the others, but he didn't acknowledge them. They looked at him, but also said nothing. Of course, they could be speaking telepathically, she realized. They passed more Verdantes, and still no one spoke out loud. But they didn't walk in complete silence. Since boarding the spaceship, Antaska had noticed a low, soothing humming noise. It must be the ship's machinery or ventilation system, she thought. In silence, M. Hoivel led Antaska down more long, tall hallways that curved endlessly in toward the spaceship's center. What do I really know about him, and what have I gotten myself into? Antaska asked herself. In any case, there's no way I'm staying on Earth. This trip has been my dream for my entire life. A little nervousness would be normal for anyone leaving on a lifelong journey into the unknown, working for an alien on an alien spaceship. In her mind, Antaska pictured the images of star systems and galaxies she had spent so many hours studying. Once more, she was filled with the familiar longing to see them up close and to explore their planets. Antaska stopped worrying about M. Hoivel's behavior. Like most Earth humans, she had always accepted the superiority of the Verdantes. Wasn't that proved by their advanced technology, medical knowledge, ability to travel through space, and mental telepathy? Anyone would feel intimidated by all that, she told herself. Chapter 3 Antaska was breathing fast and her leg muscles were burning when M. Hoivel at last stopped at the tall, narrow etching of a door in the wall. She smothered a sigh of relief. Strange alien symbols marked the door. At the height of Imhoival's chest, a raised circle glowed dim in the well-lit hallway. He pressed his large palm against it. The door slid silently up, and he walked through. Antaska followed, with her luggage and Potat, into a circular open space. A curved Verdante-sized dark green couch rested against the far wall. A large elliptical table, anchored to the floor, stood in front of the couch. Soft dark brown plush material covered the floor. Instead of the tan shade of Antaska's uniform, the walls were colored a soft blue. She tipped her head back to see where the walls curved in to form a domed ceiling several feet above Imhoival's head. There were no visible light fixtures, but bright, but not harsh light, glowed uniformly from the walls and ceiling. Two doors led from this big circular main room. After his long silence, Imhoival spoke to Antaska. "That door leads to your room," he said, pointing to one of the doors. "You can go in there and get settled. I'll get you at 1800 hours when it's time for dinner in the spaceship's dining hall. Place your palm here to open and close your door. It's coded to your handprint." Antaska went into her new quarters, pulling the cart in with her. She sealed the door closed behind her. This round room was smaller than the outer room. Walls in the same blue color curved up to a much lower dome-shaped ceiling. Imhoival would have to bend down to fit in here, Antaska realized. She felt a sense of relief and comfort to be in an Earth human-sized room with human-sized furnishings. A round bed filled about a fourth of the room. Another door led to a small bathroom. Antaska lifted Potat out of her travel cage and gently placed her on the bed. Then she flopped down beside Potat and stared at up the domed ceiling. Her mind turned back to what she had been taught in space school to expect from this job. "You might experience culture shock when you first go to live with the Verdantes. That's normal, and it will pass when you get used to your new surroundings," her teacher had said. "What I'm feeling is normal," Antaska said to the sleeping Potat. The idea of living in shared quarters with her employer had seemed strange when Antaska first learned about it, but that was the usual arrangement for Verdantes and the human assistants who worked for them. Antaska was used to living alone in her dorm room with Potat for many years, but as an assistant, she would need to be close by when needed. "It's like being a live-in house servant, except your position will be more administrative," her teacher had said, "and you'll have your own room and bathroom." It had seemed normal when put that way, but now that Antaska was here, she felt a bit uneasy at the thought of sharing a common household with an alien being. "This is strange, but I still don't want to go back," she told herself and Potat, who continued to sleep. A runt among her species, Potat was larger than a kitten but only about half the size of most adult cats. She lay curled up tightly in a small ball, her snowy white belly fur surrounded by darkening shades of gray. A wide, dark stripe flowed down from her ears and ended just before the white tip of her tail. Antaska felt a sudden stab of guilt that Potat had no choice about being moved from the home she was used to into this new and different environment. "I'm sorry," she said. She hoped Potat could understand her, even though, of course, that was impossible. Experiments had shown that domestic cats had evolved and were far more intelligent than their early Earth ancestors of a million years ago. But they had no language and were not sentient beings, Earth biologists insisted. Antaska got up from the bed and explored her new quarters. A miniature alcove contained cat food and water in small bowls. in the bathroom, and Tasca found a cat litter box as well as the standard human plumbing fixtures. She experimentally pushed the small brown button above the litter box. It sunk down and disappeared under the floor, which closed over it. Antaska heard a dumping noise and the sound of more litter filling the box. And then it reappeared. "Fantastic!" Antaska said out loud. An hour later, she had stowed most of her belongings and the floating cart. Potat woke up, but she was still groggy. Antaska sat next to her and told her that this would be their new home. The small gray cat didn't seem frightened. She rubbed against Antaska and purred. Then she sat and stared up at her. In times like these, Antaska could almost believe that her pet wanted to tell her something. She hoped it would be something like, "Don't worry about me. My home is where you are." Potat looked up at her with what looked disturbingly like an amused cat smile. Potat gazed with affectionate frustration at her pet Antaska. She lifted a tiny white paw to scratch at high speed behind one ear. Potat knew Antaska could hear her mental speech, but she refused to listen. At times, this could be a problem. Like today, when Antaska insisted on giving her a tranquilizer for this trip. "Don't drug me. I don't need that. You need it more than I do," Potat had tried to tell her telepathically. But Antaska had stuffed the pillow in Potat's mouth, held it shut, and rubbed her throat to make it go down. The memory brought up some resentment. "I guess she needs punishment for that," Potat thought. She reached out a paw and swiped it hard against Antaska's leg, pulling her claws in at the last second. "I really don't like hurting her, I guess," Potat realized. "What are you slapping me for, you crazy kitty?" Antaska asked her. "You know what for," Potat answered her mentally. Antaska shook her head but acted like she didn't hear anything. Pink hair floated and wiggled in the air. "So annoying, but so shiny," thought Potat. The little cat felt thirsty from the effects of the drug and the unnatural induced sleep. She sniffed the air for water. Luckily, some water was nearby, so Potat didn't have to cry and whine until Antaska figured out what she wanted. Potat hopped down from the bed onto the cushioned flooring. She headed straight to the alcove that had her water and food in it. "Oh, right. There's water and food over there," said Antaska a bit too late. As Potat slurped down the water as loud as she could to show how terribly thirsty she was, she heard a small plop sound from behind. She straightened up and twisted her head all the way around to the back. Antaska had flopped down on the bed. She was staring at the holographic image of stars displayed on the ceiling. "Right, just abuse me and then ignore me," Potat said to her telepathically. She didn't expect an answer, and she didn't get one. But Potat felt irritable, and she felt the need to get rid of that feeling. Taking off at high speed, she rushed in circles around the small room again and again. "You crazy cat," Antaska judged her while still lying on the bed. "This room is too small for a good workout," thought Potat. She added some intensity to her run by jumping up on the bed and running across Antaska. "Ouch! Stop it!" Antaska said each time Potat ran over her. So this was a little better. About 5 more times, and then Potat stopped on the bed next to Antaska. Time for a bath. She lifted a paw and began washing herself. Antaska turned her head to look at Potat. "Are you mad about something?" she asked. Potat ignored her, but couldn't stop the satisfied purr that escaped from her throat. Chapter 4. At exactly 1800 hours, M. Hoyle sounded the chime on Antaska's door, and she palmed the pad to open it. "It's time to go to dinner. Are you ready?" he asked. "Yes," Antaska answered. "Goodbye," she said to Potok. In much less time than it had taken to board the ship and reach their quarters, they reached a large, dome-shaped entrance. Antaska followed M. Hoyvel into an enormous room holding over 50 dining tables. Over 100 beings, Earth Human and Verdante, sat at the tables, walked around, or stood in the line at the food counter at the far end of the room. The domed ceiling soared more than 20 feet at its highest point. Except for the spaceship's ever-present faint humming sound and the tapping of dining utensils, the vast room was silent. Suddenly, Antaska felt the silence like a cold, heavy weight pressing inside her head. She began to feel dizzy and nauseous. "I hope I won't humiliate myself and my new employer by passing out, or even worse, vomiting in front of so many people," Antaska thought. Trying to regain her equilibrium, Antaska looked down at the floor in front of her. She focused on M. Hoyvel's large feet moving forward and followed him across the big room. Antaska felt steadier when they reached the entrance to the food counter. One at a time, they walked through an archway formed by a looped silvery tube attached to the floor. When they passed, an orange light glowed in the archway's inner plane. There were no workers at the counter. It consisted only of three long metallic shelves attached to the wall. One was at Antaska's chest height. One was at M. Hoyvel's chest height. And an even higher shelf was near the top of M. Hoyvel's head. They stepped up to the lower two shelves, and two panels flush with the wall slid up and open. Two trays that held food and beverages slid out from the openings on the two shelves at their respective chest heights. Then the panels slid closed. The foods on Antaska's tray were different than those on M. Hoyvel's tray, and she wasn't able to identify any of the foods on either tray. His tray held four large tubes of light green-colored liquid compared to just one on her tray. Antaska was surprised to see that he had less food despite his much larger body size. They lifted their trays from the shelves, and Antaska followed M. Hoyvel to the center of the large hall. As she entered the midst of the silent diners, the feeling of cold pressure in Antaska's head increased. She was relieved when M. Hoyvel stopped at an empty table. He set his tray down and sat in a large Verdante-sized chair on one side of the table. Antaska put her tray down on the other side of the table. To sit, she had to climb up a staircase attached to a raised chair that resembled a large high chair used by babies and toddlers on Earth. Antaska felt like a child sitting in the raised chair and was embarrassed. The other humans wore tan ship suits like hers that matched the colors of the walls, floors, and furniture. So Antaska had to look twice to see them sitting in similar high chairs. The others also sat across from Verdantes dressed in the more visible shade of blue. Remembering from her training for this assignment that the Verdantes didn't speak during meals and considered that extremely rude, Antaska remained silent. M. Hoyvel also remained silent. The combination of the uncomfortable, strange setting and the cold, heavy feeling in Antaska's head took away most of her appetite. But she put a small amount of bright green, mushy food on her fork. She chewed it without paying much attention to the taste. Then Antaska looked around. Close by Antaska and M. Hoyvel, Verdante males and females of his size sat with their Earth human assistants at tables for two. The tables were spaced about 6 feet apart. Some of the Verdantes stared at M. Hoyvel, and he stared back, but said nothing. The humans ate with stiff movements.
and Tasca felt stiff too. She knew the Verdantes didn't speak during meals, but Antasca felt a strong sense of discomfort and awkwardness, as if she was the object of the silent attention of many people. The feeling of cold pressure grew more and more oppressive. Then Imhoival looked up, and Antasca looked up in the same direction. Something large and bright red was in front of her. She tipped her head far back and saw the face of the largest being she had ever seen looming over their table. Now Antasca felt the cold pressure like a painful headache. The gigantic alien standing there was over 10 feet tall. He wasn't thin like Imhoival, but solid and muscular. Similar to Imhoival, his skin was the same color as the green grass of Earth. This man wasn't dressed in blue. He wore a form-fitting ship suit in bright red. His enormous, upward-slanted green eyes looked down at Antasca. Then he looked into the eyes of Imhoival, who stared back without blinking. Antasca felt rude for staring. She lowered her head from its uncomfortable bent-back position. She down-looked at the plate of food in front of her, but didn't eat. Imhoival didn't notice Antasca's discomfort. He stared up at Master Meep, wondering why his primary male gene contributor had come over here to the adolescent area of the dining hall. The others were watching and listening. Imhoival's green skin blushed darker, but Imhoival spoke to Master Meep with the traditional respect. "Greetings, Master Meep," said Imhoival in silent mind speech. "Greetings to you, young one," answered the huge alien. "Today is an exciting day for you and the others who have reached the age of pet ownership. You have your new pets aboard the spaceship. I became curious when I heard so much talking from all the way across the room, so I came over to see your new Earth pet." "Yes, this is my new pet, Antasca," said Imhoival, with somewhat embarrassed pride. He waved a few long green fingers in her direction. "I picked her because I liked her unusual coloring and her gentle personality. And she scored high on our genetic diversity scale," Imhoival added as an additional selling point. Master Meep directed his gigantic eyes down for a closer look at Antasca. She was staring down at her plate. "Yes, her coloring and features indicate an unusual diversity of Earth genes. That's always a valuable addition to the splicing supplies in our birth labs. You've selected well. Still, I can't help but notice that she looks a little piqued and perhaps unhappy. I don't mean to criticize, but have you been giving her all the care and attention she needs?" Master Meep asked. Imhoival lifted the corners of his dark green eyes in surprise. "What makes you say that? She looks fine to me," he answered. "The emotions of Earth humans can be read on their faces," explained Master Meep, "but they display different than on the faces of Verdantes. We don't use our mouths much except to eat and drink, and sometimes to communicate out loud with non-telepathic humanoids. The mouths of Earth humans and other non-telepaths are bigger because they use them more often to communicate, and they eat much more food than we do. They also use their mouths to express a wide range of emotions, including happiness, sadness, and anger." "Oh, I didn't know that," said Imhoival. "Notice how the corners of her mouth are drooping down. When you see that, it indicates unhappiness or some other negative feelings. And see how she is just picking at her food? Loss of appetite is another sign that something is not right," said Master Meep. The corners of Imhoival's eyes drooped a bit in dismay. "I thought I was doing everything I needed to. I passed all my human care classes with high scores, and I watched tons of their ancient videos," Imhoival protested. Taking classes and watching videos is not the same as providing for the needs of Earthlings in real life, replied Master Meep. Maybe if you tell me what you've done so far, I can tell you if she's lacking something she needs. I can give you advice based on more than 1,000 of years of successful pet ownership, but I have to admit that I made some mistakes in the beginning, too. Well, began Imhoival, first of all, I met her at the door of the spaceship with a big smile on my face. She said hello, and I said follow. Then I led her all the way through the ship to our rooms. When we got there, I showed her the door that led to her room, and I told her I'd get her at dinner time. She went in with the small animal she has for a pet and closed the door. Then later, I told her it was time for dinner, and I led her here. Well, I'm not saying you've done anything wrong, but I can give you some tips that will help you form the strong bond that makes for a lasting and happy owner-pet relationship, said Master Meep in a gentle telepathic voice. Okay, said Imhoival. It sounds like you haven't spoke more than a few words to her yet, but the most important thing for you to do is communicate verbally. That's the way humans bond. Just spending time with them and providing for all their needs isn't enough to make them become attached to you. I know how tedious verbal communication is, but in the beginning, it's the only way to let them feel that they know you. They also have a need to talk to you. It's part of their bonding ritual. They can't read our facial expressions or sign language, and, of course, they can't understand mental telepathy, said Master Meep. Imhoival felt confused. But they didn't teach us that in human training classes, he protested. No, they don't teach that, said Master Meep in a conciliatory tone. I know they only taught you the basics of pet care, limited to providing food, clothing, medical care, and shelter. I'm giving you this advice based on my own personal experience. As you know, I have a close, affectionate relationship with my own two pets, Forche and Tapxi. Imhoival looked over to the Verdante adult section of the dining hall, where Master Meep's two elderly pets were sitting among the other adults and their humans. At this distance, their tan spacesuits blended into the furnishings, but Imhoival's superhuman vision gave him a sharp view of their gray-haired heads. Both humans waved at him, and tiny smiles lit up their dark space-tanned faces. Imhoival waved back. Then he turned and looked up again at Master Meep. I believe that when you adopt humans, you're also responsible for their happiness, said Master Meep. She'll be spending almost all of her time with you for the rest of her life. In order for her to be happy, you must develop a close, affectionate relationship. This is what we call bonding. Spending time with her, sharing meals, and taking her places are some of the building blocks of the bond. But at the beginning, as I have said, it also requires a lot of verbal communication. Okay, I'll do that, Imhoival agreed with determination. But what should I say when I verbalize with her? To start with, ask her how she's doing, if she needs anything, and if she has any questions. This let her know that you care about her well-being. If she lifts the corners of her mouth, that's a sign that she's starting to feel comfortable with you. Take the time to answer any questions she may have. Fortunately, you'll only need to perform this excessive vocalizing until a strong bond is formed and she learns to read your facial expressions and some of our sign language. At that point, you won't need to communicate as much in this tiresome manner, said Master Meep. And how long will that take? Asked Imhoival. It can vary from a few years to almost 100 years for some pets, was the answer. The important thing is to form a strong bond as soon as possible. Then she'll be comfortable with long periods of silent companionship, even if she hasn't learned to read your facial expressions or understand any of our sign language. You can cut down on your verbal communication when you're certain that the bond has been formed. Very well, I'll get right to work on that, said M. Hoivel. But how I will know when the bond is formed? Ah, yes, a very good question, answered Master Meep in the tone of voice the Verdante adults often used when they wanted to sound all-knowing and mysterious. The only answer to that question is that when the bond is formed, you'll know. M. Hoivel gave a silent sigh, and Master Meep laughed indulgently. I'm sure you'll do a wonderful job caring for her. I have the utmost confidence in you, my son, he concluded. Thank you for your most helpful advice, Master Meep, said M. Hoivel with appropriate deference. And Tasca had felt miserable the entire time that the two aliens stared at each other. She assumed they were having a long telepathic conversation. As they continued, the cold pain in her head grew more and more uncomfortable. She felt as if harder and harder blows were being struck against the inside of her head. And Tasca fought the urge to hold her hands against her head and cry out in pain. An almost unbearable hard thump crashed inside her head, and then the painful blows stopped. Antaska still felt a deep coldness, but the pressure was gone. Strangely, she could now hear the voices of two men whispering. One had a deep bass voice, and the other had a higher-toned tenor voice. Relieved of pain, Antaska tried to understand what she was hearing. But despite her hardest efforts, she could only make out a few words, pet and care. Antaska looked up to see the giant alien bowing over her. The large mass looming above her head was frightening, but she was sure this was some form of politeness. The giant bowed next to M. Hoivel, who nodded his head but didn't rise. Then the giant turned and walked away to the far side of the room. He sat down at a table in a group of similar gigantic green-skinned aliens, sitting with more Earth humans. Why do these aliens have two different sizes who sit apart from each other? Antaska wondered. Do they have two separate species? Do the big ones have more power than the smaller ones like M. Hoivel? Then Antaska thought about the bits and pieces of words that had just been in her mind. Could those strange words really have been part of a telepathic conversation between the two aliens? No, I must be deluding myself by imagining that I can understand mental telepathy, she thought. She looked back across the room at the group of gigantic aliens. Most of these larger aliens sat in pairs of two across from two or more Earth humans, but a few large aliens sat alone across from a human or two. The humans sat on chairs that were like the one Antaska sat on, but raised much higher to the height of the larger tables. The huge aliens were similar in appearance to the one who had just visited M. Hoivel. Antaska's eyes were drawn by the red ship suits they wore. They created a bright area of rippling color distinct from everything else in the dining hall. She realized that she must have been too distracted to notice them till now. The skin of the gigantic aliens, in shades from lime green to dark green, contrasted sharply with their red clothing. Antaska stared and grew embarrassed when some of them looked her way, but she couldn't stop looking. The big male who had just left them sat at a table next to a gigantic female alien and across from two Earth humans, a man and a woman, both elderly. Antaska had to look hard to see the two humans. Their faces and hair were blots of gray and brown floating above their camouflaging ship suits. At the next table over from those people, another gigantic Verdante male and female sat across from two much more noticeable humans. This male and female pair sat facing toward Antaska. They were unusually tall and unusually attractive, even at this distance. The toned muscles of both pale-skinned blondes showed under their tight-fitting ship suits. As Antaska's gaze passed over the face of the male, she froze in surprise and embarrassment. He was staring back boldly and fixedly at her from across the large room. As if caught by a hypnotic force, Antaska found herself unable to look away. "Wow, he is the most attractive man I have ever seen," she thought in awe and wonder. Antaska shook her head to clear it. She remembered that she was with her new employer. He needed to be impressed, especially on their first day together. She turned and looked up at him. Fortunately, Imhoivel didn't seem to notice that Antaska had been staring at the beautiful Earthman. She couldn't resist looking back across the room. Antaska's eyes caught in the gaze of the man still staring at her. She pulled her eyes away only to meet the angry glare of the beautiful human female sitting next to him. Appalled, Antaska looked away and down at the plate in front of her. She tried to hide the riot of conflicting thoughts and emotions that swirled through her. Antaska looked up at Imhoivel again. She hoped he wouldn't see her skin turning a redder shade of tan. Seeming not to notice, Imhoivel continued to eat his food. While eating and drinking, he also looked around at the other nearby Verdante diners and waved his six-fingered hands at them. "They must be communicating," Antaska thought. She picked at her strange food, her thoughts focused on the attractive male. "What just happened?" she asked herself. "It's so flattering to get the attention of such an unbelievably gorgeous man, but it's obvious he's involved with another woman. And she looked so mad that he was looking at me. But that doesn't matter, right? On Earth, we were encouraged not to get attached, because everyone would be leaving to outer space with the Verdantes, so it's bad to get stuck in a relationship. So I would be doing her a favor to break them up, right?" In her mind, a small voice broke into her thoughts. "Wrong! Wrong! You're not on Earth anymore," said the voice. "What the heck is that?" Antaska asked herself. "Am I really going crazy today?" Then an image of her small cat Potot appeared in her mind. "No," Antaska told herself. "My cat isn't talking to me, and I'm not telepathic. I'm just imagining things because of all the stress and drama today." Her thoughts rattled on and on. "Maybe that man wasn't really even looking at me. I'm just imagining all kinds of things. Obviously, I'm so ordinary and average-looking that he wouldn't be interested in me," she told herself. Now Antaska felt embarrassed by her assumption. "Anyway, I'm not likely to meet those people up close. They belong to another group that seems to be segregated from this one," she thought. Imhoivel ate his dinner and thought about his new pet. Antaska had spent most of her life in the Earth-Human Space Training School. She had passed all the tests that Verdantes gave to their trainers to screen for those humans fit to live among them. Antaska had scored well for the potential to act as a contact with new species. Most sentient humanoids in the galaxy were similar in size to Earthlings, so they were useful as first communicators. The Verdantes were much larger than other humanoids, both telepathic and non-telepathic, and smaller humanoids were often frightened by their sudden appearance on their planets. An even more compelling reason to believe that Antaska would make a good companion was the fact that she had a small pet of her own. When Earth humans kept their own pets like cats and dogs, that showed skill in communicating and bonding with other species. At just over 50 Earth years old, Antaska was a young adult and would live for at least another 150 years, or even much longer now that she was in the care of the Verdantes. Her diet, determined by a full body scan before each meal, would be the perfect nutritional balance for her health needs at that moment. It would include powerful life-extending nutritional supplements. And Tasca would have advanced medical care superior to what Earth could provide. M. Hoivel would also make sure she had regular, healthy exercise, a necessary key to longevity. Even with the superior diet provided by the Verdantes, a sedentary lifestyle could shorten her life by many years. M. Hoivel remembered that Master Meep had noticed Antaska picking at her food. "Eat all of your food, or you'll lose weight," he told her. "It's the perfect dietary balance for your needs." Antaska wanted the approval of her new employer, so she tried some orange and crunchy round slices. They were slightly spicy and actually tasted good. Then she bravely ate some more of the mushy green food. It had a light, clean vegetable taste that went well with the orange chips. She took a sip of the green-colored liquid and concentrated on finishing her food. A blue, sweet pudding-like food seemed to be dessert, so she ate that last. Making an effort to put the handsome human male out of her mind, Antaska finished her meal. She noticed that she was in a better mood and feeling more energetic than when she had first started eating. "How are you feeling?" asked M. Hoivel. "Very well now, thank you," she answered. "A good meal of healthy food is what you need to feel well both physically and mentally," he said. A suspicion entered Antaska's mind that there could have been some mood-altering chemical in the food, but she was now in too good a mood to worry about it. What possible reason could there be for that? She asked herself. She happily followed M. Hoivel back to the area with the food service counter. They set their trays on another set of counters that was off to one side. Two panels slid up in the walls behind their empty trays, and the trays were transported through them. Then the panel slid back down. Together, Antaska and M. Hoivel made their way to the exit from the dining hall. Just before the doorway, Antaska couldn't resist turning back for one last look at the muscular, blonde human man. A pleasing jolt of some undefined emotion went through her.